Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Everybody, and welcome back to the Two Norries podcast. I am your host, James, and I'm joined by my good friend, Timmy Long.
Hi, everyone.
Ron is on the deck. Say hi, Ron.
Hi, Ron.
And Satanto Jalapeno is in the audience. I was in the studio with us. How's the farm?
How's the farm? Yeah, great, bye. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming down. It's lovely to meet you. A lot of people will know you from, you know, your sporting history and your family history and everything. But we'll go back for the people that don't know you, those one or two. Do you want to tell us a little bit about who you are and where you're from?
Yeah, definitely. You know, obviously, dad's from Fermanagh, mum's from Fiji. You know, they met, long story short, they ended up in Australia, had five kids, and then
Did your dad live in Australia?
Yeah, my dad immigrated to Australia in 1967, I think. He went to Australia on a £10 ticket. So, got off the plane and obviously carved a career for himself, like many Australians, many Irish people now that are out there, you know, like myself, you know, when I went out there. So
we have a big Australian audience, actually, for the podcast. So hi to everybody in Australia.
Hi to everyone.
All the Irish that emigrated and stayed put.
Yeah, definitely. You know, also all my sister's out there in Melbourne right now and my brother's in Perth. So yeah, all the Irish that are out there, you know, a lot of them can resonate with this. So long story short, had five kids and then my dad, his burning passion was to rear his kids and immerse himself in the Irish culture. So, you know, packed his bags and in 1988 came back to Ireland. And you know yourself, Timmy, James, 1988 was a bleak time in not only Irish history, but like, you know, it was a recession. Like, so everyone was going through it. So, you know, luckily enough, you know, we landed in Cork. My dad got a job and then, you know, we were living there in Parklands.
Oh, you know, well,
and then, so there was a family that was on holidays and they were away for the summer. So we were lucky enough to rent out a house there. But then we ended up in Kilmore Road up in Knocknaheeny. So we stayed there for a year or two. So and then ended up later on in Blarney. So I guess being in Parklands, that's how we got to play for the famous Na Piarsaigh in the north side.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
And the Parklands
right next to Na Piarsaigh.
Right next to Na Piarsaigh. So it was only stone's throw away. So, you know, and especially, you know, the first time my dad told me he walked past the club, and it was Padraig Pearce, you know. So my dad's from Fermanagh, he's very patriotic. So, you know, that resonated with him. So yeah, from then on, it was always black and amber.
That's brilliant.
Is your father a big, big man?
No, Timmy. He's he's about 6'1", 6'2", but...
There's nobody big men next to Sedanta,
I don't
think.
Like, you got up off the chair there 10 minutes ago, and I better get a box anywhere, a stepladder, taking a photograph after for this.
Since I'm home, like, people forget, like, how tall I was, like, you know what I mean? So, you know, you don't get many 6'5" guys playing corner forward now for Cork, like, so.
What was it like growing up in the north side and being a different colour to the general population? Was that difficult for you?
I guess early on it was. You know, early on you get the small comments here or there.
Yeah.
But I guess it's the same as anywhere else. Like, you know, if you're different, you know, people might, you know, say something here or there. But and the whole crux of things, it was, you know, you just got by. You got by with things. You know what I mean?
I remember back in the day, basketball was big in Cork And there was an interview with, I can't remember his name, but he was an African-American guy that came to Cork, and he was like a superstar. And he said when he first arrived in Cork, because like we're multicultural now, but back in the 80s and the 90s, we weren't really. And he said that he's when he first time walking through Cork City, he said even the dog gave him a second look. So he said the dog didn't even see a black person before. So like, it's different now because, you know, there's black people and people from Poland and the Ukraine and everything in our communities now. Yeah. But back in those days, it wasn't like that.
No.
So were you always big for your age? Did you develop, did you mature quickly?
I was an average size until I got to about 14 or 15, and I kind of shot up after that. But, I kind of thought that, just being the average size, and then shooting up, I didn't really think of it, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're just getting big while everybody else around you was getting small. Yeah.
But you know what happens for sports people? Sometimes they're big for their age, right? And then they get to the state. All right, so when you're a child, it's all about size. Yeah. And if you're the biggest fella in the team, it's a lot easier, right? But if you're bigger, you rely on your size. And then sometimes people plateau in their teens and people catch up. And then you haven't developed the skill set because you're relying on your size. No, all of a sudden you're not the big guy anymore. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
You know, when I look at it, you look at a tall player like, let's say, Peter Crouch, right? And you look at him and you're about the same height, the two of you. I see you and you're so different, muscular, like your height matches your body size, you know? And yes, he is.
Oh, look. To me, when I first started playing with Cork, yeah. I was 6'5", 6'6", but I was 88 kilos. So yeah. I was a thin string of misery, The emphasis on weights when we were playing, it was there, but not at the capacity it is now.
Yeah.
You know, the guys I look at now are, you look at the Cork senior hurling guys, you look at the Limerick guys, Tipperary guys. They're a lot more developed than I was when I was at that age.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't until I ended up going to Australia and started playing professional. And then I got, I got hit by like gym sessions every day, to bulk up. And the importance of, not only what doing weights does to you, it prevents you from getting injuries and also it enhances your game, In my eyes, the more weights you do, the faster, the stronger, the fitter you get,
And there's a different technique than to the lifting weights as well.
Definitely.
You know, it's not all about all the mass kind of build.
No, it just gives you explosive power as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's all different forms, you do plyometrics, you do functional. A lot of the weights I did in Australia, because Australian rules football, it's a dynamic sport. You got to be, not only do you got to be strong, fast, you got to be fit, you got to be able to run for four quarters, 30 minutes a game. So one game of AFL is two GA games.
So 30 minutes a quarter.
30 minutes a quarter.
So that's 120 minutes.
120 minutes.
That must be the longest field game on the planet, isn't it?
Oh, I'd say it is. It must be, yeah. That's definitely.
You're right, there's nearly two GA matches, yeah. Like.
And
that sounds tough.
They are very. The Australians, they're doing 16 kilometres a game, the midfielders, Guys in my position are doing probably 12 to 14. And that's kilometres. But it's not only that, it's the metres per minute, Yeah. Right now, Timmy, James, there's GPSs on everyone's back.
Yeah.
So there's no room for hiding.
Yeah. We'll come to that, all right? Yeah, I want to go back.
Yeah, but I was enjoying that.
we'll come to that. But you've got one very famous sibling, but who are you? So Sean Og is your older brother. Yes. What's the age difference?
Sean Og is 6 years older.
And what about your other siblings?
So I've got a brother, Dale. He's now working up in Apple at the moment. So he's 5 years older than me. And then I've got Zachy, he's 2 years older than me.
Yeah.
And then I've got two sisters, one 18, she's in Melbourne at the moment. And then I've got a sister, Sorry. She's a school teacher up in, a vice principal up in Gael Clostervera and Varnas de Huig, where I went, we'll talk about that later. Yeah.
She go to the man herself?
No, she went to Clostervera and Fiershig. Okay. It's in Glanmire. It's an all Irish school. So, my father, James, talking, just going back a bit, like when he immigrated, you know, one of his burning passions was for us to speak the Irish language.
Yeah.
So when we first came, he put us all into Gaelscoils. So I ended up at Peg Sayers. It's up, thankfully enough, it was in the Pearshig, upstairs in the Pearshig. You know, they had the rooms up there. And, you know, I went to Peg Sayers and then I went to the AG. Obviously you went to the academic. So, you know, I was thankful enough. I went to the AG and, you know, for any Northsider, you know, that, you know, wants to learn Irish and, you know, I believe it's one of the best schools, you know, to go to, like, you know.
And a great history to the school as well.
Great history. And, you know, we have great past pupils that, you know, understand what people are like in the north side and how we grew up, you know, Tim. So, you know, it was a great transition from there, you know.
I'd say they loved you and the man for the Hearty Cup.
Oh, yeah. Look, I never won it, but, you know, Sean Ogg won it in 94. And on the back of that, you know, it was... Like back then, the Hearty Cup was the be all and end all.
Yeah.
You know yourself. Everyone that, you know, if you played Hearty for your school, it's where, you know, Cork coaches or would they go to games and look at, you know.
Yeah.
It's because I've been away for a while. See, I don't know how that is now, whether they, you know, it's the minor they look at, or, but for me growing up, the Hearty Cup was, you know, everyone, and it was the pinnacle for a lot of, you know, young kids in the north side. And, you know, it was where I got a real first taste of, like, you know, all north side clubs playing, you know, culminating together and then playing for your school, like, you know.
Yeah, because really, like, you could have people from the Pear Sheiks, St. Nick's, the Vincent's, all on the one team.
The Glen, you know what I mean? So, Mayfield, Brian Dillon's, you know, you had all types of Northsiders coming together, you know, and it was great. It was like a boiling pot for us all.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be in school and, you know, you'd be put on the Mon jersey and you're playing for the Mon, and you know you go out the following week and you could be playing against a guy from the Glen that you played with in school and you're cutting the head off each other, you know.
Well, do you know what age when you guys picked up by the Cork GA?
I was thankfully enough I paid under 14s, so that was the first taste I had. I think it was called Tony Forrestal back then, I'm not too sure. I think it was the Tony Forrestal under 14. So we got bait by Wexford, it was in Waterford at the time. So that was my real first taste of, like, Cork hurling. And you know, we played under 16, and then I was lucky enough I played minor. I got pulled onto the minor team and I had 2 years of minor. But you know, obviously I was lucky enough, like, not everyone had a brother like I did, you know what I mean?
Was it difficult for you to follow in his footsteps because he'd be so successful?
Or
did you just take it in your stride?
Yeah, James, I didn't see it like that. I kind of, for me, it was about, you know, I wanted to be like Sean Ogg.
Everybody wanted to be like Sean Ogg.
Sean Ogg to me is my idol, my role model. Yeah. I know he's my brother, like, but...
Well, he was all of us, like, we all remember watching him.
Exactly.
Like, and he had some heart in that game. Like,
He had the skill and the heart, but he also is a gentleman.
Yeah.
And he's like, if you've seen him on the street, he'd salute you. One of those fellas as well.
And still to this day, in the Pear Sheik.
My wife's from Hawaii, so the last time we came was before the pandemic, and fuck it, she loves pennies.
She should have been Irish.
So
every
year, man, she's straight into pennies. Like, so Sean O came with us and we went into pennies, like, and you just see it, like, you know, everyone stops and, you know, says, Sean O, you know, thanks for all the service you give to Cork hurling, you know, football, and he's he's no worries, man, you know, I'm delighted, you know, you got to have a smile on your face, you know what I mean? And that's the joy he brought, like, you know what I mean? So it was good to see that, you know, even though he's gone from the game for so many years, that people around Cork appreciate it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of, it makes me see, I look back and I'm like, yeah, fuck it. You know what I mean? If you're putting, you know, smiles on people's faces when you're able to play the game, you know what I mean? It's that's the joy about GA.
I think it was a powerful team, though. Remember him and The Rock, Dermot O'Sullivan. It's magic coming up against them. And,
do you ever play against Dermot?
Brian Cocker.
So I played. So we played in 2004 in the county final against...
Tough man. I played soccer against him.
Oh, you played soccer.
Who did he play with?
We played
Ballintoris, was it?
Ballintoris, yeah. We played
We were in Norfolk.
And I remember he went up for a header. I won't say the guy's name though. But he went up for a header with a guy one day, and your man came down off the air like asleep.
Yeah.
Literally, like, it was, he was such a powerful man. Yeah. He had really, really massive legs. And I used to love watching them boys play in Holland, because they had what I had. Yeah. They gave absolutely everything that they had.
What else that team had then? Jordine, the O'Connor brothers, the skill and the technique. It had everything, didn't it?
James, they had all the talent there. Yeah. And not only did they have the talent, they had the work rate, they had the ethic, you know, they had the passion, everything, you know. They all bought into a common goal.
What was it like coming into that setup as a young hurler?
Ah, look, I was only raring to go. You know what I mean? You know, I grew up idolising Alan Brown, you know, Joe Dean.
John Gardner.
John Gardner, like, you know what I mean? Ronan Curran, Niall McCarty, Timmy Mack. The list goes on. Like, you know, these are kids now. I mean, these are players when I was a kid. But I used bite at the chomp to watch them play, you know. And when Sean Og was training, I used to get every opportunity I used to get, I used to go and watch training, you know, because at the end of the day, I wanted to be like them, you know what I mean? Yeah. And that was the for me, it was like, that was a natural progression, you know.
What age were you when you got, what year did you get into
2003. 2003, I got an opportunity.
And you burst onto the scene, and you held your own too?
I did. I had a lot of support, a lot of help, you know. When you're a young kid breaking on, you do need a lot of help. Mm. You know, I know myself from younger guys when I played AFL, you know, the nerves or whatnot, you know, the raw occasion might get to you.
Yeah.
But if you have, you know, players around you that are composed, and Cork back then, like, you know, they played in Munster finals and they played in All-Ireland finals. So, and, you know, sleeping in you know, Burlington, or you sleep in a hotel, and, you know, you would just get coached by them, and they would make it so relaxing that, you know, I remember Jordine, before I played, he basically taught me that whatever you do in this game, who doesn't really matter, you know? You know, there's no pressure on you at all.
Yeah,
it's the pressure's on us to perform. You know, we got to show you the way.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh fuck, nice one. You know what I mean?
That's a nice thing to say to a young player.
You know, but that's any. Yeah. That's
and you went out. You had a stormer. You played in all the final.
As long as you contribute, that's all that matters. You know what I mean?
You know, you were young at this stage, right, in school and whatever.
Yeah, 19.
I was 19, going on 20 when I started playing with Cork. Yeah.
Just before that, just go back.
Yeah, yeah.
Before that, you started playing with Cork from the young age of 14, like. Those are the teenage years.
Yeah,
you know, like did the hurling and football help you not to get kind of go down the wrong road or anything like that?
100%, 100%. You guys know yourself.
Yeah,
in the north side, you know, you can, you know, having so much testosterone as males, you can, you know, you can go down a different path.
Yeah.
You know, I know myself offhand, few of my friends have gone down that path, and it doesn't end up well, you know.
Yeah. But if the young person can stay involved in the sport at all,
it's great.
They might go through a rocky patch, but
they're always dragged back.
We spoke about this with Philly McMahon and with Thomas Gould about the GAA, you know, looking after the young people, because when you play soccer on the north side, you could play with Grattan, you could play with Castleview, Temple United, Mayfield, fucking Knockneheny Celtic. When you join a GAA club, you're with that GAA club for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Yes.
You build relationships there. They look after you. And if young people stay involved in that, they generally kind of have, you know, they do okay out of it, you know.
Definitely.
And they get jobs out of it, and they get mentored out of it, you know.
Yeah. You know, what I tell kids these days is like, they don't understand. I'm 40 years old now next year, so when I talk to kids, I tell them like that the life lessons you pick up in a GA club, you transition them into life, into work. If you can communicate with a coach and you can take constructive criticism, and you know, I know some guys, you know, in the north side, they get hot tempered, you know what I mean? And I was one of them. And if you have a coach that gives you a bollocking, you know, you got to understand to segregate that. Because at the end of the day, what are you there? What's everyone's common goal? To fucking win a game. And everyone gives up their time for free, right? So if you can differentiate, like, this guy is here to help me. He's given up time away from his family. He's coming up time. He could be with his daughter. He could be with his son. He could be anywhere else. But no, he's given time for you to get better. So you take them life lessons, right? You can accept it, right? Criticism. And then you can get on with your teammates. If you go to any workforce, first thing they say, can you accept orders? If I tell you, I'm an electrician, I tell you to go wire this panel up, and you go, no, I don't want to do that. You know what I mean? Are you an employable person?
You're not good to anybody.
Or, you know, you got, there's Jimmy here. You got to work with him for the day. Oh, I don't want to work with him. You know what I mean? So everything was relative in sport. So you go on, you get on with your teammates. You know what I mean?
Good point.
You have a burst up.
Probably good point.
Why not? You have a burst up, all good. But at the end of the day, you shake hands, hug each other, and you're just there for a common goal. You transfer, little do you know, as you get older, all these small things add up, right? And then when you go into a workforce, you're already doing that stuff. You're already doing it.
Team player, leadership, temperament. 10%
leadership. You become, no, at 14, you can become a captain. You're delegating people how to work, all this. And then when you go into a workforce, it goes, oh, geez, this guy's a natural leader. But you know what? He got it. He got it playing with Vincent's. He got it playing with the Glenn. He got it playing with the Pierce. He got it playing with Brian Dillon's. He got it playing with Mayfield. You know what I mean? That's where you pick it up.
And you'd notice that too, about a lot of the GA teams, some of the lads, like, they have really, really prestigious jobs because it's noticed by companies that these lads are actual genuine leaders and they can bring that into their company make the company.
But even like resilience as well.
100%.
In sport, there's more disappointments than victories. Like if you win a trophy every couple of years, there's a lot of matches or times you're not winning trophies, you know? But it's just dust yourself off, injuries coming back, suspensions, disappointments, and keep plugging away, That's a great quality to have.
James, why do people play GA? Why do people play GA in my eyes? It's because you grow up with the same guy since you're 5 years old, right? And you have a team around you that have grown up together, and you're playing with the same club all your life. And the passion, the joy that brings, you know, people don't get paid now. You know what I mean?
I know.
So the fact that you grew up with the same guy and you're trying to win a county, you know, it speaks volumes, like, you know.
And the pride in your parish.
The pride in your club. You know, I remember when we won the county in the Pearshing and we went up to the club, like, fucking people crying, like, you know what I mean?
Like, that's passion, lads.
You know what I mean? Look at the Glen. They hadn't won anything in 20 odd years now. And they've gone on and won, like, 3 or 4 counties, like, but, you know, I played with guys that did play with the Glen and they weren't with successful teams now. And I can only imagine when I was in Australia and, you know, I'd always look at the games, look at the results. And I looked at the Glen and the guys that were my age that were coming to the end of their career and they had won counties. That to them is going to be, you know, they'll take that to the grave, winning a county for the Glen. You know what I mean?
But you hear, like, I think it was Joe Canning said, or somebody of a high profile anyway, they said that there's fellas involved with, say, in Kilkenny, for example. They won so many All-Irelands in the last 15, 20 years, but they'd give up a few of them for one county or for one with their club. Because the club means a little bit more, you know what I mean? It's that harder thing to win, you know? To win an All-Ireland with your club. If you're winning with Kilkenny, they're winning 5 out of 7 years, you know? But to win it with your club is that little bit more special.
It's special. Like, when I know, you know, when I was in Australia and I got the opportunity to come back and play, you know, we beat Klein in 2004. It was my last game. Looking back, that was my last game of hurling. And to go out on a high like that, you know, especially playing with Zaki and Sean Ogg, because, you know, I never ended up playing with Sean Ogg ever again. You know, I played with Zaki in Australia when he came back. And that was a great experience by itself. But to win something for my club, especially, you know, after I left, you know, obviously hadn't won anything, and to give back to the club is something that I look back and cherish for the rest of my life now.
We've a sign, man, on the wall, you're right.
Christy.
Oh, Christy Ring.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
Yeah.
We were up with a friend one night, the two of us, and he had a load of these pictures inside in his office, and he says, lads, they're there if you want to take them away. And I looked, and I said, it's Christy Moore. I said, that's actually a beautiful drawing. So we brought it down here and we hung it.
Christy Ring.
Christy Ring.
Christy Moore, he said. Christy Moore in the county.
Don't ask me where that came from. We were talking about Christy Moore.
That's Christy Moore playing.
He actually looked the same.
Look, Christy Ring, like, is he a Clyne man or is he a Glen man?
A Glen man. Originally from Clyne.
Originally from Clyne, but look, you know, that guy is going to go.
Legend of all legends.
He's a legend of all legends. He's won how many 8 All Irelands, you know what I mean?
But it's the mystique and the legend around him as well.
And it's just the raw natural talent. Yeah. You know, the natural talent.
See the documentary RT did on him?
Yes.
He was tough out as well. Like, he fucking, you know, there was a bit of nastiness in him too, like. But you don't get to that level of having that.
No, you have to be tough.
2003, you're after breaking into the scene, you've unlucky to lose in an All-Ireland final, you're an all-star hurler, and then you leave to go to Australia.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
Oh, look, for any man, you know, growing up, or for me personally, I knew GA, all I wanted to do was play hurling football for Cork. And, you know, everything, all my training or everything was a combination of just playing with Cork, playing with Sean Oak, winning on Ireland. But also in the back of my mind, I knew that GA isn't a professional sport. You know, as you guys know, you turn on the TV and you look at the Premiership, you know, you look at John O'Shea, Waterford man, you look at Roy Keane, Dennis Irwin, you know, these are guys that, you know, especially Roy Keane from Mayfield, professional athlete, professional player. Like, back then I only dreamed of that.
Yeah.
You know, look at Dennis Irwin, same thing, you know, dreaming of becoming like, you know, especially from the north side.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you get many opportunities like that. They don't come around, come around that often.
Yeah.
So when I got the opportunity, I was like, holy shit, I get an opportunity to become a professional athlete. I get a taste of it. I can go out to Australia. I can try it. And if it doesn't succeed, I can come home.
Mm. How does that work, Satanta? How does it work? Do they send scouts over to Ireland regularly or what?
Regularly now. You know, you see now with the influx of the women's, I don't know if you guys have been, it's not well documented, I'd say, but Australian rules, the women's side of it is becoming as professional as the men.
Really?
In the next 5 years, I'd say it'll be full on professional. Right now it's semi-professional. You have about 10 to 14 GA women out there now, and it's only going to grow.
Yeah.
So,
but there's a lot of down through the years. There's around that time. I mean, a lot of GA fellas went over, didn't work out, and came back.
Exactly. Yeah.
Worked out for you, and you have a lot of appearances over there. Can you talk to me about the different in standards in terms of like training, attention to detail, and the overall professionalism of it?
Definitely.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's a the world's apart, really, you know. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything.
Yeah.
You know, professional sport is professional. You know, the difference is you get up in the morning, you got to go to training. You get to training about 6 to 7 and you're there till like 4 or 5 o'clock. Solely working towards one goal, trying to play every weekend, trying to benefit or improve your body. Mentally, physically, you know, to play at the highest level. GA athletes, all, you know, they've come on in leaps and bounds, no question of a doubt. And, you know, will it ever be professional? I don't know. I'd love to see it professional, but look, I don't know whether it will or not. But the amount of effort and work they do is like, it's unparalleled to what I used to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Them guys, they're doing so much. But the difference is they got to get up and go to work.
Yeah.
You know, they do longer hours, obviously, because you got to work 9 to 5 and then after work you go to training and then you might do weights. Whereas an Australian rules athlete is straight.
Dedicate your life to training.
You just dedicate 10 months of the year and you're training and playing. And
is that the length of the season?
It is, yeah.
A long season, months. Isn't it?
Very long season. Yeah. You have the pre-season. They're trying to shorten the preseason now because obviously with just the demands of the game now, you play 22 games in a year. So you play one game a week for 22 rounds. And then you, if you're lucky enough, then you make finals, then you make the grand final. So
how could you go through a whole season without getting injured in Australian rules? Because it's such a tough sport.
It is, Tim. Like, you know, you got to be very lucky. You got to be very lucky. A lot of things got to go your way, you know. I've played 3 years out of my 14 that I haven't been injured. I've been thankful enough. I've had injuries, but you've kind of get through till the end of the year. You know what I mean? And then you get it looked after. But, you know, out of my 14 years, yes, I had ups and downs. But... you know, if you're lucky enough, you know, you can get through games. But if you, that's where, you know, you got to really look after your body.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing weights, you know, you're basically, what you're doing is trying to keep yourself on the park, you know, and by improving your physical well-being, you know.
Did you transform your physique?
Oh, I did. Yeah. That's so when I played with Cork, I was 88 kg. So when I ended up at Carlton, within 3 years, I was 107.
Muscle.
Well, I'd like to say muscle.
Just muscle.
Muscle. Like, because I just wasn't competing. The game has evolved now, like GA.
Yeah.
You know, obviously the game, it changes. But when I played, it was all physical. It was a physical game. Big men now, you know. So,
But you'd know this, I spoke to you before we started.
Yeah.
A few years ago when we did international rules, you know. There was a few situations there where the Australian fellas, they just bullied the Irish lads, like, and they just looked, bigger shoulders, bigger pecs, bigger backs. The Irish fellas.
But you know what? It actually looked like they weren't even putting in much effort.
Yeah.
Because they were just so much, like, you could see that they're professional. Yeah. You could see that they're training.
And I think there was a bit of an ego there as well, like, I'm a professional athlete. There's no way a part-time or amateur is going to beat me. And I'm just going to, you know, just impose my strength and physicality. You know, and it got very rough and it even got cancelled for a couple of years afterwards.
But look, what I'd say to you, James and Tim, like, you know, forget about the international rules. Just for a second, park that aside, right? Just do yourself a favour and on a Friday night or a Saturday, just... get online and watch an AFL game. You know, what they did in the international rules, that's normal, you know. They're doing that stuff.
That's part of the course in Australia, like.
That's part and parcel of the game. It's a tough game. There's tackling involved now, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They do it week in, week out. So it's naturally they do it here, you know. And the GA, they don't kind of play like that. You know what I mean?
Has there been people getting injured really, really badly as well? Has there been, like, because it's actually reminds you of a sport nearly just as tough as rugby, if not more physical, but just stronger, kind of more athletic men.
Yeah, dude. Do you get the normal injuries, Tim? Like, you know, you get the, you know, you do your cruciate.
Yeah, it's a beautiful summer's day here in Cork at the moment. You know, wearing a shorts, you've got a big scar on the inside, inside your knee.
So I did my cruciate, like same in the GA. Like, you know, you might turn the wrong way, you might fall, and a lot of the injuries come from that. You know, you might fall after you catch a ball and you might pop your shoulder, you know, but there's no real malicious injuries. Like, there's no one out there to cut someone's head off. You know, if that's what you're thinking? Like,
you'd be thinking the NFL over, like, and there's so much talk about the injuries, the head injuries because of the tackles. Yeah. And I was just thinking, like, from the few times I did watch the Australian rules, like, they were so tough. It reminded me of something dissimilar without helmets.
Nah, the rules are put in place where they're like the contact, it's not to the head. Yeah. You know what I mean? So they do protect the head big time, you know. And if you do contact the head, you do get sent to the tribunal, and you get sent there, and you'll get the right according, you know, you get the right suspension. Like,
what was your role in the team?
I was lucky enough, you know, when I first got there, I started playing in the back line, which I was unfamiliar with when I played GA. But to learn Australian rules, they say you got to caravan someone, which is, if I'm a defender, I got to follow the forward around, and then you pick up the patterns of the game. And that's how I did it. So they put me full back, centre half back, and I would follow. And, you know, you try, if the ball's kicked in the air, you try punch it away or spoil it away, you know, or tackle. And then you start to learn the game. And then when you start learning the game, you know, you can, you can...
Interactive.
Interactive, or you be more flamboyant, or you can, you know, you begin to, like, run off and be more creative. That's the word. So, and as I got more creative and the more I understood the game, I played in different positions. And then later on in my career, I ended up in the forward line, which, you know, as you know, I love scoring goals. It was a natural. Who doesn't?
It's the glory of scoring the goal. Yeah. The
glory of, you know, when you score goals in front of 80,000 people now.
Is that how big the crowds are?
Oh, the crowds are huge. Australian rules is the number one sport in Australia.
And were you a big star?
Oh, no. I wouldn't say I was a big star. I fulfilled the role all right. You know what I mean? Yeah. But there's guys that are, you know, really, really, really famous, you know.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, obviously they've played their whole life, and I wasn't one of them. No, you know what I mean.
I don't want particular details. I want this right. But can you earn a good living playing that for Irish fellas that's going over?
Oh, definitely. You can. Yeah. You can.
That's great.
Look, if you
would I be too old and far.
I know.
Prison rules.
It's definitely lucrative. Yeah.
We had a couple of sports stars on this podcast in the past, and when they were sports stars and successful and it was great and they had the profile and the success and all this training, and then the career came to an end, and then it was like, what do I do now? And that's then where the problems developed. What was life like for you when you finished your career?
Thankfully enough, you know, growing up in Ireland, you know, everyone has to work. You know what I mean? So when you play GA, you know, my dad, he had to get up, go to work. You know, kids that I was growing up with playing, they have to get up and go to work. Guys in the senior team, you know, they just, you know, we were just going to school, you know. And then you know, in the back of your mind, you realize, like, you know, as you get older and you start playing with the senior guys, you know, you do three, four nights a week in the Pierce again. And, you know, the guys are, some are sales reps, some are plumbers, some are electricians. So I kind of knew at the end of football that you're going to have to work, you know? And thankfully enough, for me, that was the kind of progression, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas I can see where, you know, some guys, you know, you see it in the English or you see it on Netflix, you know, you see players when their career comes to a halt, that they, you know, they go into deep depression and all that, you know, and it does happen in sport.
Yeah.
But thankfully enough for me, I guess whether it was my upbringing coming up, growing up in Cork,
just had that work ethic, like
I had the natural work ethic.
You seem to me like somebody has to be probably working physically and moving about and being working outside,
definitely,
you know, because like a lot of us, me included, we need to be using our hands, because if I was sitting in an office, like I'd be fiddling with everything, I'd be playing
100%, you know? So when I first started, like when I was a young kid, I remember my first job was at the Blarney filling station, you know what I mean? Washing cars, putting in petrol. And then, you know, I worked with my brother-in-law, Donald McSweeney. He had a plumbing company. So I started working with him in the summers. So I was always, you know, doing laborsome work. So it was kind of natural progression that, you know, right now I'm doing two years to finish an electrical trade. So got back and, you know, getting your hands dirty, I guess.
It's great because it's never late. It's never too late to do it.
But I'll tell you something else, though. Like, electricians can basically ask for what they want in this country.
Well, that's what I'm hearing now.
Straight up.
He'll be back in 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Naming his price.
Don't tell me that to me.
They're on really, really good money.
Yeah.
Really, all trades are on really good money at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably one of the best paid jobs in Ireland at the moment is tradesmen, because there's such a demand.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah, Timmy, I don't know, you were talking to me, but since I've back there, a lot of people are saying that they're finding it very hard to get tradesmen.
Unbelievably, yeah.
And when I was growing up, like, everyone was a tradesman. And, you know, the boom, the Celtic Tiger.
That's right.
Everyone was there. And then obviously, you know, the recession kicked in and, you know.
Then factory jobs became very, do you know, what's the right word? Attractive.
Attractive,
exactly. Let's get off the cold building sites into a lovely, we get our health insurance.
A lot of fellas was burned from the last recession, and it's more stable to go into Pfizer's and Apple and Johnson and Johnson now.
Yeah.
You know, because when a recession hits, the construction is the first industry to go, you know.
100%, James,
Do you know, when you're an athlete, especially when you're a professional athlete, you have your health checks, you have your dietitians, and you have your training. What was it like when you finished your career?
Yeah.
Like with your health and your nutrition and stuff like that?
James, great point. You know, when you're a professional athlete, everything is there for you. You know, you get fed at the club. You know, sometimes you can even sleep at the club. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. When you get injured or you get a dead leg or anything, you know, the facilities are there. You get the ice. You know, we've got underwater treadmills where you walk in. It's amazing. Mm. Not only comes with that, you get the best of facilities. You get the gym, you get the tracks, running tracks. You know what I mean? You get the nutritionists, you get the psychologists, you get the dietitians. What else? You know, physios, myotherapists. You name it, you get everything. Not only that, you get a doctor. Mm. You get medical screening twice a year. Mm. So anything that pops up, you're aware of, you know? And, you know, for me, a bit about my background is when I finished playing, you know, it was a culmination of all the years I had been, you know, dedicated to the sport. I kind of felt, fuck it. I'll splurge. You know what I mean? I can go out on the weekend and I can have a few drinks and then I
eat what you want.
Eat what I want. You know, I love fish and chips, like, you know what I mean? So I can get in there, have my fish and chips, you know, but I kind of let that go every week. You know, it ended up being once a month, then twice a month, then you have your Chinese, then you have your Indian. And then you finally know it, then you're drinking every weekend. Yeah. You know what I mean? I guess like work becomes, you know, might be stressful. You're in a different environment. You're not used to it.
Yeah.
A bit of stress there. Have a few beers to relax. You know what I mean? Like any Irish man would do.
Because you don't have the sport for the release. Now you have the crack.
Now you have the crack, you know? So it was a combination of all that I started to get symptoms, like, you know? And then, long story short, hadn't gone to the doctor for 4 or 5 years because I didn't have a thought of it.
Yeah.
I thought, like, Jesus, invincible, like, you know, your body. But slowly do you realize you're doing a lot of harm to yourself, you know, and started getting cuts in my arm at work and they weren't healing. And then I was like, oh, holy shit, you know, and then I started getting sore feet. Then long story short, found out that I had type 2 diabetes.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, coming from being healthy, playing sport my whole life, just neglecting myself, and then coming to a stage where you get type 2 diabetes, and then the realization of that. So now, you know, thankfully enough, a good friend of mine, he's got, I'm now working with, he works for Middell Health, Thomas Brown. We went to college together in IIT, and you know, we got 4 clinics all over Ireland, and I've just started a awareness campaign for diabetes type 1, type 2, and you know, we're gonna roll that out for this month and the upcoming months coming up. And it's just an awareness for people, not only playing GAA, playing sport, soccer, whatever in Ireland, but anyone at work, you know, just to get yourself checked out once a year, at the start of the year, and also, you know, at the end of the year, you know. But at least if you go once, you know, the perception of people in Ireland is like that, you know.
It'll be grand,
or, you know, they don't want to go to the doctors.
Yeah.
But if you can identify something early, no matter what disease it is, it prolongs your life, really.
Yeah. And it's not a harmless disease. If that goes untended, you can end up blindness, even death.
Limbs, toes, fingers.
So James, when I got diagnosed, they brought me in Hawaii, because that's where I'm living. And I went into a clinic, because they give you they got to give you a talk, like, you know what I mean, of the repercussions of now being a diabetic and what I can do. And I sat down with, there was a group of 10 of us, and there was 2 guys. One guy didn't have a leg, and one guy didn't have an arm. Like, and that was the effects of just neglecting now, you know, really neglecting.
But that's scary.
What the doctor, that turned my life around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's not until you get a scare like that, you know, that you kind of think, shit, I got to do something about my health.
How do you manage it now?
From now I manage it with a healthy diet, you know, whether I still drink, but everything is in moderation.
Yeah.
You know, I do my blood testing.
Did you have to eliminate any specific foods?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. All the sugar, all my sugar content, you know what I mean? I used to be a high carb. All my meals were high carbs, I guess, because I sort of thought that the more carbs you eat, it'd fill you up, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
you
don't really need as much carbs as you think you need.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And everything, Tim, is done in moderation. In life, if you can do things in moderation, amazing, you know.
And you know what, no better time for a campaign like that to come out, because we're so addicted to sugar in this country. And you know, not just looking after our nutrition and what we're putting into our bodies. And I'm saying this now because my own self, me and James have recently trying to eat healthy and to mind ourselves a little bit more.
Backlifting weights, you might have noticed the biceps there, you know.
Yeah.
But we're back, we're trying to eat healthier and lift the weights and get back into it, you know.
And it's definitely like with us in Middell Health, with Middell Healthcare, it's all about preventative health.
Yeah.
Middell.
Yeah. And where are they based?
They're based, so we've got four offices. Okay. We've got Letterkenny, Dublin, Athlone, and here in Cork.
And there's clinics as well.
There are clinics, yeah. You walk into them, you get a test done. There's a 20% discount. Mm. You put in #Satanta, and you go in there, and you get to see your AC1 levels, and you get to see your sugar levels, your glucose. But you know, we do all types, you know, occupational health. We do screenings.
Yeah.
So we do all full screenings. Full screens. Full health body screenings. Yeah.
Have you got a place in Cork?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, 74 South Mall.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
So Middell Health.
People walk in there and check that out. Yeah, you can get your bloods, you know. And so it's just for me, what I've learned over my time in football now.
Yeah.
And if I, you know, if there's an area, people have told me like, why don't you get back into training or training teams and all that? Yes, it's good, time consuming, but when this opportunity, especially with my health and where it's gone, I can touch more than just GA players,
100%.
Soccer players. I can touch normal punters in Ireland, normal Joe Soaps like us, trying to make a living, going out there. And if they just look after their health, just get checked out once a year. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
You know, if you were to save yourself, you know, if you got something and you didn't know, and some time along, you know, along the way, you look back and you said, oh, I had an opportunity to spend 100 euros on just to look at my health.
Yeah.
Would you have done it?
Yeah.
Of course you would have done it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've been meaning to do it. I have actually been meaning straight up.
Oh, coming with us.
Yeah, for a month, if not 12 months, I've meaning to go in and get a full screen on bloods, to see what foods I may, because sometimes there you eat a certain food, next all of a sudden you've lower wind.
Yeah.
You know?
You might have allergies you don't even know about.
Exactly. So we do, James, we do allergy tests, we do all tests, we do digestive. You could be allergic to something that you don't know of. And it could be like, you know, it could be giving you a sore stomach, it could be your intestine.
Grains, wheat,
you know, and
that's good enough to
know. So if you go in and get checked, you know, we give you that. And then not only that, when you do get your results, we'll refer you to the right person. You know, there's doctors there, and they'll refer you to the right doctors, the right professionals, and you know, and that's the beauty, and that's what I'm driving now. And you know,
are you driving from Ireland, or are you driving from? So, are you coming home to stay?
Well, that's my dream. My dream is to come back. I'd love to. Like, you know,
I might have the right electrician for you to join as well.
Look, I'd like to have a life of Bono. You know Bono?
He
lives 6 months in Ireland and 6 months in the south of France. You know what I mean?
Wouldn't it be nice?
Six months in Hawaii.
I get 6 months in Hawaii, Tim. You know what I mean, James? If I could do 6 months there and six months here, man.
Wouldn't it be nice?
Coming from the north side of Cork, you take that. You know what I mean?
I'll do 6 months in Cork and six in Kerry.
You know what I mean?
But look, it's nice in Cork at the moment. No, we're having beautiful sunshine, like, but when you're 6 months sunshine, Hawaii, you come home to soaking wet fucking parklands, believe me. You're pining after Hawaii after the north.
Don't worry, I'll be here for the 6 months in the summer.
But if we got 6 days of summer, now we'll be laughing. But before we let you go, I just wanted to get your opinion on Cork GA and the state of it at the moment. Like, we're not in a good place. What do you think has gone wrong? Or
That's the $1 million question, isn't it, James? You know what I mean? Look, for me, it could be a few things. Like, you know, when I was growing up, Cork were in Munster finals, All Ireland finals. You know, we were winning All Ireland finals '99. You know, if we weren't winning them, we were competing in them, either losing them or we were making semi-finals.
Definitely.
Not only were we doing it in senior level, we were doing it under 21. We were doing it on a minor. So for me, the winning mentality was there.
Yeah.
Whether we have lost that over the years, you know, with Cork teams not making it into a minor. So I know was it this year or last year they won the minor?
That's right.
So first time since I won it in 2001. I lost one 2002. 20 years, you know what I mean? So it's a long time for a Cork minor team, you know yourself, like, and the perception out there in Cork is that we are winners, which, you know, when I was growing up, that's all I heard. We are winners. We win All Irelands. We play in All Irelands. And that's the mentality I had. Whether, you know, the kids growing up have kind of like, the winning wasn't there and they've just progressed on, you know?
Yeah.
Or else whether you can blame the
board, you can blame the individual manager. We're not here to do that. What we're here to do really is maybe find a solution.
Yeah.
Find that little je ne sais quoi that will just give them that little edge, like that heart that we had back in the day with Sean Ogg and Jodine and Dermot O'Sullivan and yourself and all the other lads in the Cork team. I love that. I love the Roy Keane mentality. Get out there and get stuck in.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the best player on the field. Is the leader for like catching them all. Boys, this is how it's done. You know, are we lacking that?
I think I spoke to a GA player off the record when we went in.
Yeah.
And they were telling me about the they had to bring their own equipment to the gym, that they were renting off a GA club, that they bring their own dumbbells and their own gym mats. Then they're lining out against Dublin or Kerry, where there's they're like royalty in their counties.
In Dublin,
like,
they get
doesn't matter
needs,
how much heart you have.
Yeah.
If you're being, if you're like an amateur, an extra professional, I don't know, it's a figure of speech.
Yeah.
But you know, like, there's no way them fucking Dublin players, the Kerry players, are bringing their own dumbbells.
Yeah.
And yoga mats to the gym. They have the best of everything, and rightly so. I think a lot of it is from the top as well, you know.
100%.
Yeah, look, there could be underage structure, you know, whether you've neglected that. You know, there could be a million reasons why.
Exactly.
You know, at the end of the day, like, we're Cork people. We just want to see Cork do well.
And it's sad. You know? It's sad, like, it's we haven't won in all Ireland so long now, you know, it's, you know, the hurling and the football, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And for the proud county we are. And, you know, the esteem that we hold the GA in. That,
I feel it's just coming, though. Yeah. I feel it's coming. Stanter's coming back in.
When I watch GA and I watch my own, all you want is Cork to win.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, I talk to Sean Og every weekend when I'm in Hawaii or when I was in Australia, you know, he goes, oh, geez, Cork, you know, they lost or, you know, this and that. But, you know, and...
Yeah.
Everyone in Cork wants to see him win.
I know. And even go out there and give everything that they have.
And you know what? Yeah. The players now, they're probably giving it their all.
Yeah,
that's they're the doing thing. Everything they
there's,
can.
There's
like,
nobody's going out there giving half-assed attempts.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
something else is going wrong.
Yeah,
exactly.
And like, it would be a tragedy for Patrick Horgan not to get a big honour in his career because he's such a talent, you know what I mean? He's a generational talent, you know, and obviously he's in the north side as well. Like, But look, I think the hurlers are on the up, aren't you?
And I suppose there's probably a whole squad of fellas there talented. You know, I suppose they just need you know, that extra little bit of a push from whoever else, you know, and I'm sure that they will come good.
Definitely. And I'd say the longer stuff goes on like that, then it becomes a psychological thing as well. Like, are we going to get across the finish line?
Well, one thing I know I've learned in my time in sport is, or in matter of fact, anything you do in life, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, it's either a form of insanity or... you're never going to change. You have to do something that you have never done before in order to get a result.
Different results,
So if you find you're doing something over and over again, change it up. You know, you never know. You know what I mean? But all I know is that if you keep doing the same thing again, you're going to go nowhere.
That's good advice to finish up on.
Beautiful one.
Lovely talking to you.
Not a bad kid.
Thank you, good.
Pleasure. Right. See everybody next week.
How was that, Ollie?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.